I'm ready. I'm ready when you are. Erica. Good, she asks interesting questions.
My question is probably going to be a little bit repetitive, so can you hear
this? Okay, but say it a little bit louder so the people in the back can hear.
So I can't help but wonder sometimes when I'm hearing this, and I'm kind of embarrassed to ask this.
No, no embarrassed. Everybody's question is very important. It's your question. So there's no gradings on questions. Because what is your question, you have to ask it. It's important to ask it. So for you, it's important.
Yeah.
And it's probably important for everyone.
Yeah. It's definitely a serious question that I ponder a lot. And that is, what is the point of all of it when we're going to die? Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think about that because, you know, I don't know, sometimes I really feel that, you know, I think the impermanence of things. And I can see why, you would want to, awaken for, the present moment, you know, or change your life for the present moment, or, be a benefit to beings. But sometimes I think, you know, I can't help but think about that.
Yeah. So Erica's asking, what is the point if you, everything's impermanent and you're going to die? What is the point of doing these practices?
And that's not to say I don't want to have a positive life and have be a benefit to the world around me. But sometimes it's there's a fear there or something, or like it's all going to be lost.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's so many ways to respond to that, actually. Yeah. One way to respond is a little bit what we talked about last night, is that you don't have to wait for freedom and liberation. So it starts, you can have that now. You know, you can enjoy your and value experience now. So why wouldn't you? That's one, I guess, a question. Why wouldn't you practice this kind of, you know, again, you know, like talking about this practice, lottery practice, you know, it becomes very clear that being giving to others is so joyful, and that holding things for yourself is so painful. So in the interim, before you die, why not enjoy your life, you know?
Yeah.
Why not enjoy your life? So that's one, maybe that's one response. Maybe another response is that maybe it can teach you. This thing about death is interesting because we die because we have this belief in realness. So this practice is actually breaking apart this sense of realness, these beliefs that we have. When you don't have a strong sense of realness, then you don't have to worry about not realness. You know, we have a tendency to think, and this is what the Buddha said, you know, we're caught in the extremes of thinking either something exists or it doesn't exist. And this is about understanding how things really are, which is not about something existing in some solid and intrinsic way. You know, we exist interdependently with everything. And so when you have that kind of understanding, there's not that same kind of grasping to the self. And if there's not the same kind of grasping to the self, then you're not as afraid of impermanence. You know? And this is, you know, now this takes a little bit more work to understand this. And experience in the practice. But it's the holding on is the pain. The holding on to the self. And there's a lot of holding on to the self in your question. Yeah. Not to say it's not a good question, because we're all holding on to the self. So it's a valuable question. You know, I could say, oh, it is nihilistic. You don't believe in reincarnation or something like that. But I don't kind of think that way. Believe in reincarnation. What is a belief in reincarnation? It's some sort of concept. I don't like that word belief anyway so much. Because you understand continuum when you start to have an experience that you're not so static and real, you know? So, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I guess my question in a way is, what continues on when you die?
Well, that's another good question. You know, if there's a strong grasping to the self, that continues on when you die. If you're able to fall apart, you know, great. That, you know, if you're able to fall apart, there's only joy and compassion, you know, and relaxation, just meaningfulness, you know. And you can see this in some people when they pass away. I mean, some people really do have that.
Yeah.
And then it's not, like they say, it's like walking from one room to another or something. It's not this big trauma, you know. It's not this big trauma. But if you're holding on to the self, then yeah, it's traumatic. And that's another reason why we practice. For this sense of openness and this, just to kind of question this realness in all these beliefs that we have about ourselves. This realness. I mean, we tend to like to see things in terms of it's true, the self, or it's untrue. But there's a whole other way of being besides that. And that's what we're getting at. You know, this is called the middle way. This is what the Buddha called the middle way. He said the way of being, the way of being that he was able to realize under the Bodhi tree was beyond seeing things as existent and believing in things, which he called an eternalistic attitude. And then, or meaninglessness and the loss of the existence, which is a nihilistic attitude. There's a whole other way. That's what this leads to. That's what this leads to. So you work with the grasping through this practice. It's a powerful practice for that. Yeah. You know, you have a lot, you ask that question from a belief, you know. Like I was saying last night, space is, there's infinite possibility. This is a belief, you know, kind of like that. And you're closed into this small, you're not seeing the full thing. And there's a lot of grasping to the self that we all have.
Yeah.
When there's grasping to the self, impermanence is a real enemy.
Yeah.
There's nothing more scary for the sense of permanent, solid, singular, permanent self than the fact that things change. But, hey, what are we going to do about it? Because, I mean, that again, that's the definition of pain. Grasping onto something that's changing and dynamic. That's the whole problem. So you have to put a lot of effort into this. There has to be a lot of transformation of the mind. And this is a really good practice for that. Yeah, I feel so comfortable teaching this practice. You know, I'm just a spiritual friend. I'm not a guru, so I can't give pointing out instructions or wongs or that kind of thing. But I feel comfortable giving this one. You know, I have so much devotion to this one. This can really change you. You and maybe even in particular. I mean, Erica's a dear friend, you know, and I slowly poke at her. Are you practicing? You know, I don't want to be irritating. I think people have to, you know. But I would be joyful if she practices more and more. And I think she's a very deep person. I think something will change for her. And I have a lot of faith in that. Okay? Yeah, Jackie.
I
Yeah, and that speaks very much to the power of interdependence. It's not like anybody is ever this one static thing that stayed in one place. We are all distributed everywhere. You know what I mean? There's nothing that we actually don't have a connection to. It's like I think my boundary is just like this. The minute I look at, I forgot your name again?
May.
When I look at May, she's now my boundary because my thought, my whole awareness is filled with her. You know, when I look at you all the same, it's expanded. You know, you can't be autonomous. That's what this has a lot to do with. This, we are not autonomous. If we are autonomous, then maybe something could die. You know, but we're not autonomous. We are a part of something much bigger. You know, this is the freeing aspect of studying all of this, the interdependence of things. And the Buddhists trust that so much, the teachings on, you know, interdependence. You know, that's very powerful, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you, Jackie. Yeah, me.
So last night in your teaching was really inspiring. So today I try to incorporate your teaching into my work, which is really a big challenge. One thing I find out is very opening for me. Another thing is I find myself so exhausted when I let this touch me. Because I don't have this singular mind of getting stuff done. Rather, I broaden my perspective to consider other people surrounding and this parameters.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I feel so exhausted. Mm-hmm. My question for you is, so what are the signs for me to know when I let life touches me?
Okay, yeah.
And the second part is, so what is the stages of when life touches me? I'm assuming my exhaustion is just beginner's experience.
Yeah.
Hope there's a, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe let me make sure I understand what you're saying. I think I might. It's actually what we talked about boundaries, I think. You know, Mae brought some of what we talked about letting life touch you into her work life. What do you do?
I work for IBM.
Oh,
and
wow.
Today I had actually my performance review with my manager, so I just myself to be vulnerable. I had to make my mistake first.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, yeah. So we're really talking about boundaries here, aren't we? Like, where is the boundary? And that's a very provocative question. I think in one way we need boundaries. It's not like, okay, take it all in. It's more that life happens to you and you're listening to it and learning from it. But I think in terms of the way we relate to the world, and please let me know if I'm not addressing your question. This is an attempt on my part. It's not about, we still have to relate to our life intelligently. And I was saying with Gina today, the question that works for me in this context is, what serves? What serves? We always have to ask what serves in the situation to support our awakening or to support our relationship or to support our living situation. So it doesn't mean like you lay yourself out vulnerable. Actually, this practice I was talking about last night is kind of an empowerment practice. Because it's not just making yourself vulnerable. I think it's actually protective. It's actually a very protective practice. You're able to look, but you're not getting lost. You know, you're not getting lost. And so there's a sense of finding that resting place that's very important. But it doesn't mean that you don't relate. And I don't know if this is what you're talking about or not.
So when I say let myself be vulnerable, I mean more is like just open up to the experience.
Yeah.
And that process is very exhausting for me today.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, there is a stages, and how do I know this? I'm really letting myself, let the life touches me, or I'm going to another extreme.
Well, tell me why was it exhausting for you? I'm curious. Like, how did it work? Tell me.
Well, I think, so first thing in the morning I get up, I do meditation, then I just sort of, I'm going to have this important thinking, I will, and just think about it, what I would do myself, what suggestion I would give to myself, what I do well. So in that perspective, I'm being honest with myself first.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, when I meet with him, so one of the stuff I come up is, for example, is assume this, ask more. So So when I had a meeting with him, I just take on that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I keep asking the question, clarify a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all an ongoing conversation. I'm trying to be alert and trying to engage him.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to him, not just simply say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, this whole engaging experience for me, it's like my first retreat where I, like after 5 hours, I'm just completely exhausted. I'm just wondering if you can sit in there.
Yeah, well, it could be. I don't know. Does anybody have any insights on this? Because it could be that. It could be that you're more alert and you're getting used to that. It could be. I understand when you say being in retreat and getting exhausted, because sometimes it really is like that. It really is like that. And you're more engaged in the life and you're not used to it in that way. So it could really be that. It could just be, I see what you're saying. I maybe misunderstood the question. Does anybody else have any insights on this? I'm curious. Yeah,
well,
Bob.
Sometimes when I let go of my holding on,
mm-hmm.
that's when I feel my real exhaustion. I'm exhausted most of the time.
Holding on.
But I don't feel it because I'm holding on. I have to work. I have to perform. I have to do this and that. And when I let go of that, I become tired.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we just feel the way we really are instead of, and we do this to ourselves, particularly in Western society. You know, that 2-minute nap, we don't take it.
Yeah.
You know, hold on, being always performing and never letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't need this.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear it. Yeah.
Also, all the walls that we always keep up as a defense, you know, the same as what you were saying about all the concepts or ideas. It's like, I see walls as the sort of metaphor for that, you know, for protection, mm-hmm. especially for job evaluations. Mm-hmm. What do you most need?
Yeah.
So for ones to be so brave as to let them down or fall apart and let them go is would be exhausting.
Was it helpful in your meeting? Were you able to? Was the result good at least?
I feel like this is one of my best reviews because I learned so much. I was really humbled actually in the end. I see the Buddha nature in him, which I don't.
Yeah.
Which comes as a surprise to me. Why was it surprise to me?
Yeah.
Whenever other people show their Buddha nature to me, always humbled.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's nice. I guess sometimes it's that extra alertness or maybe extra effort that you put in. But I don't see how you can fail by seeing someone else's Buddha nature and being alert and being not assuming and being humble. I can't imagine that you'd be any worse off for that kind of thing, that could only be a help. I don't know. That's been my experience. That there's never been a time where I haven't said that wasn't helpful. You know, so that's I'm so happy that it turned out well. And we won't go too late, so you could go home and go to sleep. You look bright. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, the giving was a whole lottery thing.
Oh, okay.
You see, I guess that was mostly I focused on the lottery to talk about the giving and how much joy there is from giving. When I was giving, you know, when I was going to pick up my brother, and how I saw this video after, because I had this whole connection with the lottery after that. We played the game. We played our game. And then I saw that movie, and I was like, wow, you know? So much joy in the giving and how healing that is.
Yeah.
you know, and how this is a way that we can digest. This is how to be energy efficient and use our experience well. I guess that's the point I was trying to make. So there's these two ways, the taking and the giving are both the do that for us, you know, help us digest. So. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Very sad. It's very sad. Yes, you know, maybe in certain ways we have maybe a tendency to think that the sadness is not a good thing. It's just perfectly fine. That's the thing. It's like, it's true, sometimes we get a little overwhelmed by the sadness. I did this last week. There were times I got overwhelmed by sadness. It's kind of just part of it, you know? And then you find that middle way, you know, with it. But the sad, I think sometimes one feels like one should be a little more detached or a little bit less sad. And I just think with the kind of love, I really feel, you know, with love comes grief. It's going to come some grief. I don't know, perhaps, you know, at some level that doesn't happen. I was thinking of, you know, this week, I've just been thinking so much about loss, and my teacher was doing a Chenrezi empowerment. When I walked into the room for the empowerment, I felt some interesting thought came into my mind that no matter what, I have a willingness to love. You know, I'm not going to shut down just because there's some pain in it. And somehow that changed kind of the quality of feeling the pain. It's like, let it, bring it on, kind of. I felt that attitude, that yeshe sojo, you know, kind of spirit. It's like, okay, bring it on then, because I'm not going to stop loving, you know. And the feeling that I got is like, I'm just going to love more and more, you know. And it was strong, you know. It, that willingness to feel the sadness, like the sadness is not, if you see it in this way, if you value it, then it doesn't have to be so overwhelming. It's just an expression of something. Yeah. 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 That's okay if that happens, but try to do both, because there's some kind of balance here with it that's very helpful, I think. Try to do both if you can. It doesn't always work out, you know, the way we expect, but just keep going and keep going. It starts to balance out, and then you find that place where the overwhelm doesn't happen so much, because you don't get... The overwhelm is a little bit about getting lost in your story. You know, the story of my horse, my drama, whatever. And it's poignant in its way. But ultimately, there's something much more than that, you know? So, you know, you just keep doing it. But it's no problem. The sadness or the flowing over of some expression of care and some grasping, too. But that's fine. It's being human and all. Yeah. Shows a lot of caring nature on your part. Staying awake.
How do you stop? How do you stop if you keep falling asleep?
Yes. We all have our different styles of avoiding this bearing witness part. So some people fall asleep. And part of it might just be physical, too, because if you're not sleeping very much... You do? Yeah. You have insomnia, do you think? Or no, you don't have insomnia. Okay. Because that's quite challenging. A lot of people have that. There was a period of time in my retreat where I was falling asleep more. I was trying to think what my teacher told me. I remember he told me to just fall asleep and wake up and just start again. Fall asleep and just come back. And fall asleep and just come back. I also think in this particular practice, when there's a poignancy, there's this feeling of poignancy, it's really hard to get tired, you know? So this kind of visualizing. When you feel something poignant, you wake up. You know, like when there's an intense longing or an intense compassion or an intense sadness, often it's awakening. Suffering is awakening, actually. So sometimes in this practice, if you do much more vivid visualizations, you know, vivid recollection, like of a. You know, I was telling Peter the other day, I saw this another documentary called Earthlings, which was a very, very, very painful movie about the mistreatment of animals in the fur industry and so forth. It's the most excruciatingly painful thing you could possibly watch. And I have a friend very dear friend, very good practitioner, but he has this kind of tendency to be not feel sometimes, he says, not feel much. And he has a tendency to fall asleep as well. And he says he watches this movie constantly because it is so poignant. And he loves animals. And it kind of keeps him connected to the practice. I know it sounds funny. It's not a matter of torturing yourself. But there's this kind of waking up that has to happen from it.
Well, I think in my case, I don't want to see what comes.
You don't want to see what comes. Yeah. Oh, I see. So it's like a really strong avoidance. You know, just sit with that a little bit. Just sit with the pain of that and breathe it in. Just sit with the pain of that. That has a wakefulness right there. You have a wakefulness just talking about it right now. Like there's that pain there. It has a wakefulness in it and a sadness in it, you know. This is valuable, very valuable for you. You know, you don't want to fall asleep. And this is your kind of koan or your particular stone. You know, we all have a stone. This is maybe, right now at least, this is your stone. It could change. This might not be a stone in the future and you have another stone. It's always valuable to have a stone and know what your stone is and appreciate your stone and supplicate in a way. Like we were saying, you know, I don't know. I don't know. You know, what do I do about this? I don't know. And wait for a bigger answer. You know, wait for a bigger response for yourself. But it's interesting to watch because I see just in your questioning and your pain of your situation that there's a lot of wakefulness there and a lot of longing to fall apart, a lot of longing to want to see something. Do you know what I mean? Do you feel what I'm saying? So you need to appreciate that. Appreciate that. A lot of times the things that we think are a problem are to really be appreciated. I find this very interesting. You know, people say like, oh, I want to go into retreat, but I have to take care of my family. And there's so much longing, so much intensity there. And I think, well, they could go into a retreat cabin for a month without this longing, and they probably wouldn't accomplish as much. This longing is very important. And the pain of what you're feeling is important, and to just keep open with it and breathe that in and breathe out wakefulness, or do whatever you feel you have to do when you're doing the practice. And if you fall asleep, you fall asleep. Wake up and do it again. But set a really strong intention and don't be hard on yourself. Appreciate. To let it touch you, because you're saying you shut down. You don't want to experience something. You set the intention to let it affect you and let this teach you something. You know, this is your stone. Yeah. So, but there can be more appreciation toward what you're going through than you have. That's what I think I'm saying, is that there's something good in this. I see. Probably everybody here sees, and you're just asking that question and the kind of pain that you feel from it and this kind of desire to have it be different, and that is just to value that this is your experience. Does that help at all? Yeah, just think, just doing that and think about it, and maybe other things will arise for you. Mm-hmm. May,
can they share this experience because I had exactly. For many years, until I really studied with a Zen teacher, and he told me exactly the same thing. when you have to fall asleep, you fall asleep. Then I saw him fall asleep on the computer, right? Because he has to juggle between making a living, handling the sangha, all that stuff. And he just, when he needs to sleep, he sleeps right there.
Yeah.
I finally just stopped struggling.
I think sometimes like being hard on ourselves makes it worse.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of what you're saying too. It's just like, let it go then, a little bit. It's okay, you know. It's actually like wherever we are stuck, it's all okay. It's like the golden opportunity for something different to happen. It's the stone. You swear on this stone thing. It's really key. Yeah. Well, I guess it's a little bit what we've been talking about. That it really is your projection. You know, what is suffering and what is happiness is so much our own projection. And so I think that means that also when we're breathing in or we're sending out, we're really breathing in, you know, our own, what we're trying to avoid. You know, and breathing out what we're clinging to. So it really does start with ourself. It's all really ourself and working with that. But utilizing the experiences we have, you know, in the world with others to teach us, you know, a lot. Yeah, Bob.
When I was in medical school, I had an aneurysm in my brain rupture. When I was in medical school, I had an aneurysm in my brain rupture. And I was comatose, and I remember finally waking up in the intensive care unit, and some guy was talking about how he didn't do anything. I was getting really mad at him. He didn't help, didn't try to prevent his heart attack, and he didn't do anything for himself. And he smoked, and he didn't watch his diabetes. And I'm thinking, why do I deserve this? You know, why me? Why am I here? And I didn't do anything. You know, I was working on maintaining my health and all that. Why me? And ultimately, I realized, why not me? And is there really, does deserving really exist? And then you think, like, when you say, why not me? It should have been my brother.
Right.
My wife, my children, mm-hmm. ultimately anybody. And I think that's a block that holds us back, that we think we deserve anything. Mm. And things just are. Mm-hmm. And why not me is, for me, something that unblocks me and lets me go.
Mm-hmm. 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 And you're relating that to what Donna was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still look like you have a question. Maybe, do you?
I just didn't know if that slogan actually implies a particular method. Like, we learn different methods of tongue learn, by imagining an animal or something.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that slogan is... there's any method that goes with that, or if it's just kind of enfolded in the general
Tonglen instruction. Is that more one that Trungpa Rinpoche put in? I think so. That
sometimes it's as close to me.
Uh-huh.
Starting with people that personally or in it.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. I guess, yeah, this method of being very specific and then general, maybe it's referring to that, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Bob. Yeah.
Practicing, it's not any practice, this particular, I began to see my own attachments and ego and so forth creeping in to situation. Is that a good time to stop and look at that and see how I got myself involved, or should that wait until after practice?
I see. How you mean, like tracing back to how you got all tangled up or something?
No, or
you didn't hear all of it.
A particular person or people suffering from the same thing, and I begin to see how my own attachment, especially if I know them.
Uh-huh, I see.
It's sort of coloring what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah,
should I just push that aside until later? Or
never push anything aside. I don't think. I think, you know, you breathe that in, too. You breathe in the attachment. You breathe in the stickiness. You breathe in the... You breathe all of these things in. It's not like there's some separate, like you and them and all that. You just breathe in whatever the agitation or whatever. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. This is the nice thing about this is you're ingesting, so you're not going to push anything away. And it's all good and acceptable. And valuable, I guess is the point, right? It's all valuable. Food. What is that in one of the chants, food for meditation, as is taught, you know, in Vajra, the Shambhala Center? You might have the same one. Something talking about food as meditation. Food for meditation. It's all food for your meditation.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yeah, Dina.
I had it called in from Susie, our dedicated practitioners here, who couldn't be here. And her question is about a friend who races sailboats around the world.
Mm.
And when the day that he goes to leave his family, he notices he lingers as long as he can, because he really doesn't want to leave them, and has a real physical sensation of, you know, tugging and tearing and not wanting to go. He finally goes. He gets on the sailboat and immediately gets, you know, excited and engaged and sees the crew. And and looking forward to it, like it's going on the world, and not so much thinking about his family anymore. And so her question was, can you talk about this, a little bit, talk about this sense of strong attachment that's actually physical attachment, and then once you get up and let it go, then the opposite reattaching. Because now he's very much attached to his crew and everything about it, totally engaged in what he's doing. So detaching, reattaching, and she has felt this the same experience. So she's
yeah, that sounds like me too a little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard to get me out of crust zone.
Yeah.
I tug and pull, and like my animals are there, and my friends are there, and then I don't want to go anywhere, and then I come here, and then now I'm enjoying myself. I think it happens like that a lot, I guess. No, it's just attachment. It's just attachment. What's the question, like, what is it, or like, what exactly? What just happens like that?
Just the sense of, like, attachment, letting go.
Yeah.
Reattachment.
Yeah.
Sort of like, what's it all for?
Yeah, what's it all for? Yeah. Yeah, what's it all for? Yeah. What's it all for? Because...
The elephant in the mud.
Yeah, the elephant in the mud question thing. Again, you know, it is true also, though, with it attaching and detaching and all that, it's like the way to work with it is just like to appreciate again and learn from it, you know. And then kind of just have a sense of humor, you know, that we are so like that. I find it a little bit humorous, you know. Everything seems so real. You have one thought and then it's like, I can't leave my family, you know. And then, boom, it's so kind of flimsy, you know. And then you have another thought, you know, I'm so attached to my crew, I can't leave my crew. It just is kind of interesting. I just think you just have a sense of humor about it and lightness. But I think it's just a human, I don't know, it's a human phenomena. I don't know what more I can say about that than that. Just that our thoughts feel very real sometimes, and our emotions. Seems like maybe we should close up. It's getting late. May all those kings of nations defeat the enemy of wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all kings be free. Thank you very much. It's really enjoyable. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth.
Kiki.
We loved having you here.
Thank you.
Before you came, everyone was just felt lucky and excited. And right?
Yeah. Right.
And now that you've got Bill and Jane on hand. And since you've been here, we feel just grateful and lucky. Your teachings, your presence, the questions, just all wonderful. Thank you so much for coming to me, for leaving Crestone, coming to
me. From detaching.
We hope you will again. And Erica, thank you for being such a beautiful attendant and our teacher.
Oh, thank
very
you
much.
So much, effort to everybody. I enjoyed it so much. Tomorrow I have to detach from here and go to Vermont. But I enjoyed it very much. Very, very much. So thank you for all sharing and all your questions and insights. This makes I learn a lot.